Right, let's get to some of... well, actually, before we do that, let's go to a telephone call because May joins us now. Hi, May.
Hello, Greg. How are you?
Did you nearly call me Sean, May? Old habits die hard.
Exactly.
And there's no harm in that either, by the way. It would be an honour. Okay, so May, you were listening to the Caelan a little earlier on, and this resonated with an experience in your house, didn't it, May?
It was. I'm going back now. 1989. We live in a farm down here. At Bry near Rathmullen, and there had been an old sort of car here for parts out, and Sean and Sinead, the twins, they were about 4 years of age, and they were out and they were playing in the car and that, and the next thing Sean came in and he was sort of choking, you know, or, and he had been on medicine for his chest at that particular time. I thought this is maybe he took his own medicine and it went the wrong way. But anyhow, I give him a glass of cold water, and when he started to take it, he started to foam at the mouth.
Oh my word!
Just foam, and of course I panicked, and I got my late husband died there a year and a half ago, and I got him and took him up to the hospital. Or to the doctors, and then they said that, oh, give him just ice cream and keep, you know, and went on and on like this. So eventually, anyway, he got worse, and he had to be taken to the hospital. And he was in Letterkenny for a while, and then he was transferred up to Our Lady's in Crumlin.
Yeah.
And he didn't go through the operation for, I think a few years after that, because they tried everything that they could do, but eventually he did have the operation.
Before we get to that, because it really is quite a remarkable operation, particularly for that time, May, did you ever find out what he consumed?
I didn't, but we went up at a night time. It was a Wednesday evening. I got a message to say that there was a bed free up in Dublin. So I thought I would just go on up. So we went up that night. And then the next morning, when the surgeon that came around then, they said, you know, I explained to him. And he says, really, Mrs. McFadden, he says, with your quick reaction, he didn't get it into his stomach.
Wow, okay. But it did cause serious damage, though, didn't it, to his esophagus?
He had to get 3 inches cut of his colon, and it was transplanted on to his esophagus.
Wow. And how did that operation work? Like, did
it worked? Yeah, it worked quite good. He was away right enough from 11 in the morning until 5 o'clock in the evening.
Yeah.
And then they sent him out with what they called it a bougie.
Mm-hmm.
It's about 24 inches of sort of like a rubber tube.
Yes.
And it was full of mercury. And he had to swallow that 2 or 3 times a day.
Wow.
To make sure that the throat, you know, that the esophagus would work.
Yeah, okay. And what was the long-term, was there any long-term damage caused or did the operation resolve most of the issues, May?
Oh, well, yeah, the operation did do that, and it went on and on for years and years. He's in his 40s now.
Right.
And it went on and on for years, and I got any clue at all that the throat was narrowing, we've just headed straight to Dublin.
Right. And did that happen often?
Oh, well, mind you, there was weeks, a good while up in Dublin with it, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But it came on then, as I thought, this was a lifelong thing. And then about 7 years ago then.
Yeah.
He was up for the dilatation for the esophagus.
Yes.
And I was speaking to the head surgeon, and he had a talk with me, and he said, "I just want to tell you, Mrs. McFadden," he says, "he should be clear of this hospital in about a year and a half." Now, that was in November of that year.
This isn't well into his 30s now, isn't it, May? Yeah?
He's in his 40s now.
No, but when they said he'll be clear of the hospital...
Oh, yeah, it was in his 40s.
Okay,
yeah,
so what did he change, or what happened? That?
Oh, well, I suppose prayer had a lot to do with it, too.
Right.
And we were out in Lourdes. We went out to Lourdes as well in 1991.
Yeah.
And the surgeon that I was talking to, he told me that news in November, that within a year and a half or something, he should be completely cured.
That's remarkable.
So, well, do you know, Greg, it was the greatest Christmas present I ever got to hear them words. For I thought that it was, a lifelong thing that he would have to do that all his life. And actually, there was a man came over from England, from the Children's Hospital that's over in England. And he came, got a phone call to say that he was calling. So he came here and he took a video of Sean swallowing the bougie.
Right, okay. I don't think they'd prescribe mercury now to consume, would they?
Well, I wouldn't think so. It was full of mercury, and then he doesn't take it now, thank God. But he's still weary too, just about it, you know.
I love, May, the fact that you speak about him as if he's still 4 years old. He's still your wee baby. Still your wee baby. You're talking about your dad.
And will be.
I know.
And will be.
You're talking about being down in Dublin and chatting to his surgeon and him, a big, hairy 40-year-old. I love it. It'd be the exact same as it would be in my house, by the way. So that's I think that's a lovely part of the story. Now, he is happily married and everything's going good, May.
Thank God. He did have there some time ago. He started to get the hiccup.
Right.
And, Greg, it was unbelievable what he suffered for about 10 days.
Mm.
And he tried everything and he had tablets, and now he can't take tablets except soluble ones. And he decided then that he would go up to the hospital and see if they could give him something for the hiccups.
Yeah.
And they went up, he went in, he was putting a drip and one thing and another. So then they let him out then on the Wednesday and with a prescription for tablets. Mm-hmm. And him, he came out the way he went in. And then his Steph's daughter then said, she says, "I'll try and see if I can get anything that'll help you in any way."
Yes.
And she went online and she got a hiccup straw, as they call it. And within a couple of hours, the hiccups was gone. After him spending nearly over a week in the hospital.
Wow, fab. Amazing stuff. Listen, come here. I'm glad that everything has turned out well.
But on a farm too, and there was nothing. It was just happened to be in the car that my late husband had bought for parts for the other car, and the two of them were playing. They weren't at school. There were only four.
Yeah.
And there were only four, and then the First Communions was coming on then. I didn't know what the story was because the two of them were going for First Communion. So they said then up in the hospital, the chaplain up there said, well, he says, I can, give him a First Communion here.
Yeah.
And then with them being twins, I thought, no, I prefer the two to go together. So I rang the parish priest here in Rathmullen at that time, and he said that he would do them any time. But before that, then the surgeon come round and he says, if you want to take him home for the communion, Yeah. So okay. We got out on the Friday and then they made the First Communion Saturday.
Okay.
And the only thing was he couldn't take the communion. He had to take the wine.
Of course. Right. Okay. Yeah. Because of the injury. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, and that, you know, it was very emotional because he got out on the Friday and then he had to go back into the hospital again on the Tuesday.
He's been through it. And you have too. And of course, too, May, you mentioned losing your husband really recently too. And hopefully you got good comfort from your faith, which it's clear you have.
That's the only thing people has to look to. I'll tell you, at a time like that too,
yeah.
That's when you know when the prayer is read. But thank God, everything's married now and he's back to square one. You
in
know
a
what
good
I mean?
Way. He's exactly.
All right,
May, listen.
But it is terrible right now, you know, when
the
dude, but as I say, there was nothing.
Yeah, and do you know, like between washing powder and the wee dishwasher tablets that look like sweets, wee Hudson came in to me yesterday. Because there was a box out come into me with one of those wee dishwasher tablets thinking it was a sweet, asking me to open it. That's why I said to Kaylin earlier on that we were talking about this yesterday. It's just that for I'm over careful, May, but it's just that in that instant you can just let your guard down and you just don't know. It's not bad parenting. It's just it's hard to keep on track of everything. So conversations like this with you, May, and Kaylin earlier just reminds us to double check those spaces and make sure.
This bag was in, or wee box was in the car.
Yeah.
And they thought that it was sugar.
Oh,
and
right.
He took it, but his twin sister, she didn't take it, you know.
She knew better, probably.
And that's what the surgeon said to me. He says, with the quick reaction of giving the water and sort of then Francie went out then to the car.
Because if that had gone into his stomach, it would have been a whole different story. Okay, May, listen.
That would have been...
It's been lovely. Sorry, May, I beg your pardon. Slight delay there in line. It's been lovely speaking to you, and I'm glad to hear that all's well that ends well, and he's happily married, and it's a happy ending to the story, and he's still your wee 4-year-old or your wee 3-year-old.
2-2. Okay. 2-2.
Of course it is.
Okay,
bye,
great.
May. Have a lovely day. Take care of yourself. All right, okay. Another big baby in front of me now. Paul McLaughlin, gardener at Ballygthurg Garden Centre in the Mountaintop Letter. Kenny, Paul, how are you?
Not so bad. I still get referred to as the Wayne as well.
Me too. Yeah, me too. It just doesn't change, particularly with mums. Right, okay. The weather. I'm kind of not interested in anything to do with the garden. Anything
right.
that I just wanted to do. I want to do summer stuff like gardens and grass and plants and get outdoors. But the weather has been. What has the weather meant for our greenery and our flowers and what have you, Paul?
Pretty much everything's growing quite well again now. Like the grass is growing again. Really, during the sort of heat wave we had there, it had really taken a step back. You could see the verges all turning yellow and stuff.
Yeah.
But they're
grand needed it, didn't it?
That did, surely. Yeah. And it's actually the sort of persistent rain that's been happening sort of slightly over time is actually wetting the ground fairly well. So it's actually. But for anybody growing crops, that potatoes or stuff like that, it would be perfect to actually get.
Yeah, for sure. Just at the right time.
Yes.
Now, that doesn't mean, though, that we should neglect watering, because not everything gets access to the water that comes from the sky.
Absolutely not. No, it's very easy to become complacent at this sort of stage. So it is.
I think that's what I was talking about, my complacency.
Yes. So, but no, it's sort of whenever you look out and it's raining, you think, God, it'll be grand, if you know what I mean. But the stuff sort of in under porches or in under the eaves of the house is not getting it. So you really have to keep up on the.
The advice is always there, isn't it, in terms of deadheading and is feeding. I mean, obviously deadhead all the time. It's an important part of the whole process now. A good time to feed.
Yep.
What should we be feeding our plants?
Perfect time to feed. Probably for flowers, that sort of stuff, Miracle Grow's your best bet. Sort of as cover all sort of thing, you know. But because the thing's actively growing now, it's perfect time to feed because it gets the most out of it right through the plant.
Feeding, so feed them the good stuff, right? Okay.
Absolutely.
Right, we also, I mean, not everything, we have to keep an eye out for stuff. You mentioned potatoes, blight, that we've had a few blight warnings. I think a lot of people are right across that if they're used to growing potatoes, but still. But what other things should we keep an eye out around our plants that we could remove or could be damaging our plants?
Pretty much the big thing to look out for at the moment would be slugs.
Yeah.
That sort of dampish weather is just perfect conditions for them to be active. It's warm and it's damp, so they love that sort of thing. So keep an eye out for slugs. Just physically remove them if you want, or use your beer traps or whatever. And another thing, it's sort of aeration of the blight would be black spot and roses.
Mm-hmm.
So if you got any of them sort of fungal infections, this sort of weather's perfect for them. So just keep a wee eye out and treat accordingly.
Especially as the temperatures creep up as we head towards the weekend.
It's
going to be even damper and warmer.
Humid, probably.
Right. I mean, we, over the course of doing this, get more and more questions all the time about people growing their own food. It's a nice hobby. B, it's satisfying. But C, also, too, you know, people are becoming, with cost of living and all, I'm not saying this is the solution to it, but I think we've become more aware and look at it a bit more. Is what about now if someone wants to get into that? They've got a bit of space.
Yeah.
Can you grow food at the moment?
Yeah, pretty much now's
perfect. What can you get?
Now's perfect time for growing food, I suppose.
Tins of beans?
Pretty much you can grow your own beans if you want.
Tins?
Tins, possibly not.
In delicious ketchup?
Yes, what do you call it? But no, funny you're on tin stuff there. There is nothing like your own beetroot.
Yes.
Like what I got. Beetroot is perfect for growing. You can getting a wee bit borderline late for it now, if you know what I mean. But you can still sow it from seed now. But there is nothing tastes like your own beetroot. Like it's nothing like the stuff in
what
the
else? Salads are salads. Easy, aren't they? Anything leafy or herby is
absolutely
easy.
Probably
enough,
if
isn't
you're
it?
Starting with something like rocket, it'd be very good because it's very quick growing, if you know what I mean. And if you want to go or oriental sort of stuff like the pak choi, now it'd be perfect at this time of year.
And for those who have a head start, is anything being harvested at the moment? I think spuds over the next couple of weeks in towards the end of the month, depending when they were sold and what have you. What else is...
In my own garden, the strawberries are coming on nicely. I've been sort of harvesting away.
Where are they?
next week maybe. But no, funny, last night I actually got a pile of cucumbers off the plants too in the tunnel.
Cool.
So they didn't know.
They're above ground, are they?
Yeah, right. It grows like a climber almost.
Yes.
So it does now, but you get loads, even one.
How
cucumber.
Big are your cucumbers?
My cucumbers be about sort of...
That's a decent 12, size 13 cucumber.
Inches,
and how thick?
Thick, probably... about 2 inches across.
And is
maybe.
It this exactly as the one you might get in a shop? Because you know we talked earlier on about before about carrots, and carrots can be, you know, can look different than but your cucumbers.
No, these ones will be fairly perfect. So
tomatoes.
Tomatoes, yes, a wee bit early for tomatoes to be ready. They're actually nicely on the plant.
My mother loved growing tomatoes. Right, you know, it was almost like we never existed when they started the wee green balls.
Yes, funny, that's mine. Just look at it at the moment. They're just the wee green, what do you call things going on nicely now. But probably in the next few weeks, they'll be ready.
Brilliant.
Sort of starting to come ready, you know.
Excellent, okay. So, they're also in your tunnels?
Yes. Absolutely.
Okay.
Right, so if you're very lucky in a south facing wall around here, you may get them grown outside certain varieties, but generally they're an undercover plant.
But the tunnels aren't necessarily incredibly expensive or scientific or what have you. I mean, it's not hard to create one, I imagine.
No, absolutely not. There are a million and one versions online you can copy, if you know what I mean.
Exactly.
And
it's not a science. I mean, there's a science to it, but it's not.
Yeah, exactly. I know someone you can actually put up a sort of structure. A lot of people sort of start with a homemade structure and work towards something bigger.
Yeah. Once you start seeing the results, you go, right.
Exactly.
Okay. It's like fishing or something. Or golf or whatever.
Catch the bug.
Is it too late to plant carrots, parsnips in a polytunnel? Very poor growth outdoors. How do we achieve no-dig gardening?
No-dig gardening is the thing that's become very popular in the last few years. So it has. It's a thing, you don't actually dig up the ground. What you do is cover it in cardboard. And then add sort of compost, a layer of compost over the top of the cardboard. And over the course of the months, then the cardboard sort of biodegrades. And then the ground and under comes into play. But it's not labor-less.
What's the advantage of that?
The advantage of it is you're, first of all, the no dig.
Yeah, but you're still shoveling.
Yeah, you're still shoveling stuff, but it still is a lot less sort of labor intensive.
Right,
it gets rid of the weeds without actually
digging them over, if you know what I mean.
But no, I've seen a good few people using it to very good success.
So, what about parsnips or carrots in a polytunnel?
Parsnips in a polytunnel, I would leave them for about a couple of weeks yet because it'll be quite too hot in the tunnel.
So, it's not too late then?
No, it's not. Even outside, it's not too late for carrots.
But they're saying they've got very poor growth outdoors.
Pretty much. If you give them a good feed, now would be a better time to start them outdoors because the tunnel's nearly too hot.
I have two apple trees. We apples were starting to grow. Next thing they fell off, leaves all the way black on the apple tree. What's gone on there?
I would say they've probably been a victim of the heat wave that is driven by what happens. And a lot of times if the tree sort of thinks that it's in drought conditions, it'll throw sort of the excess.
Goes into survival mode.
Exactly.
Right.
So it just throws the excess stuff like the fruit off and that sort of thing, you know. So it's just, I think it's probably a result of the heat.
What's the best grass seed to put down on patches as our dog has made a track over and back and all the grass is worn away? Yeah, they want to sort of match the grass, don't they?
Pretty much. The most common around here is what's known as number two lawn seed. You get sort of three grades. Number one would be like a bowling green. sort of grade. Number two sort of fairly rough, and number three would be quite rough. So number two generally will match in the most stuff.
Yeah.
And just mix it up with a bit of compost or a bit of sand just to keep the moisture in it until it establishes.
All right. Can you ask Paul, how often should you put sulfate of iron on a lawn, not just for moss kill, but for general feeding and greening?
For general, the sulfate of iron itself won't do much in terms of greening it itself, you know, but it will kill the moss. And sort of, it allows the grass,
which allows the grass to thrive.
Yeah, pretty much. Okay. So pretty much, a lot of people do it just once a year, sort of around April, May time or so. Mm. But in a particular bad case, you could do sort of April, May, and then do it in September again.
All right. We have a plum tree. Never hear much about plums.
Oh, plums are quite popular.
It's a long time since I've had a plum, actually. Mm-hmm. We have had a plum tree which with nothing ever on it. Why is it? Hopefully, it is a plum tree.
Yeah,
but it's never fruited.
Mm-hmm.
What's that?
Could be a couple of things going on there, but point number one would possibly just needs a general feed. Mm. So pretty much you feed it now with something like your poultry manure, that sort of thing. And then April time to sort of put the feed directly towards it producing fruit would be potash.
Okay.
April time or so. But if in any doubt, just in case anything obvious going wrong with it, just take a few pictures and take it to your garden.
So yeah. Is it too late to plant roses?
Too late to plant roses? No. Once a plant's in a pot, you can plant it any time of year. You probably won't get as full a full display of blooms this year, but you'd also be in good fettle.
You're just replacing it's just a location thing, really.
Exactly.
Isn't
No, but once a plant's in a pot, you can plant it any time of year.
Okay. What plants are suitable for a small barked area?
Small barked area, pretty much if you're doing an area like that there, what you'd want to do is sort of select a few plants that's going to flower at different times. Like generally someone flowers spring, someone flowers summer, someone flowers autumn. And the likes of that there would be just to give yourself a range. So something like azaleas for the start of the year, maybe hebes for the autumn time, or hebes for the summertime, and something like rudbeckia for the autumn time would be perfect.
Our lawn was formerly a field, and now it's full of moss. Where do we start?
Yes, so big area, obviously. So probably someone like Scarifier, that like the ordinary push one, might be too big an area for it. So if you could sort of source, even online, somebody locally with a Scarifier in the back of a tractor, maybe, would remove
But
a
do
lot
you have
moss.
To talk about why there's moss there to begin with? In
generally,
other words,
drainage would be a problem, all right.
Because that could be a fight and battle, couldn't it?
Absolutely, yeah. But generally, a bigger area like that, you'd be looking, probably not looking for just like a bowling green lawn anyway.
Yeah,
so
exactly.
If you could think, but drainage probably would be the first issue to look at.
All right, what month can I plant beetroot?
Beetroot? Ideally for beetroot, you'd be planting it sort of March, April in trays and then setting it out about sort of May, June or so. But if you want to directly do it from seed, you'd do it either June or pretty much now. You can still do it
for when, if you were doing it from seed for now, when would you start seeing the fruit of your endeavours?
Yes, about October.
Okay, so in the middle of October, now's a good time to seed it if you've got the patience to wait till October. Right, this is a biggie. Novice gardener, they want to get into it. They haven't a notion where to begin,
right,
but want to make a start on my garden. It is very large. So do you start in the middle, around the ends? Where do you begin? What happened?
I suppose the thing to do there was sort of get a...
You know what I'd do? I'd take a picture and go in and see you.
That's probably number one thing to
That's
do.
That's what I'd do, because just because we've said it in the past, and let's reiterate it. You know, you can see the wood for the trees, if you know what I mean. You can say, well, that might not go nice here, that might go nice. It's hard for you to sort of pass that information and allow you to do so, of course, Paul. But that's what you're there for. Say, look, you're there to inspire, and, you know, you're at the start of someone's journey. You would love it. And the same of the brilliant staff in all the other garden centres as well.
Yeah.
You've said it time and again, haven't you? Take a picture, come in, have a chat.
And actually, it's never been easier to do that in the sense now with Google Earth and stuff.
Yeah.
You can actually measure from your phone. You can measure your garden, all aspects of it, and even get the direction of where the sun's coming from and stuff, you know. So that'll be the first thing.
And someone says to you, look, my budget this year is, let's just say, you know, 250. What can I do to make a difference this year? You can work with that. You'll help people with it.
Absolutely.
It be,
generally, you're better starting with a sort of cohesive plan.
Yeah.
Because there's nothing worse than doing a wee bit this year and a wee bit next year and then realising it doesn't work together. So if you can sort of put a plan in place first, and someone as well, like gardening can be expensive. So going away and getting your soil tested would be a good start as well, because you can then select plants that are suitable for that kind of soil rather than going buying a lot of plants that actually you like but won't work in your garden.
I hear you. All right, come here. We have to go.
Yep, that's the deal.
It's rattled through there. We've been chatting for ages. All right, listen, thanks very much for your time, Paul. You'll be back again soon. Hopefully we'll have more sun.
Yes, absolutely. A bit more sun wouldn't hurt.
Yeah, I just want a summer now. I don't, you know, like we are in mid-July. Slight exaggeration, it's the 6th, but you know what I mean.
Yeah, we're going that direction.
The way these forecasts work now. Like, we know until next Thursday that we're not going to have good I used to want long-range forecasts. Now I just want to tell me what's happening tomorrow.
That's what I got.
All right, listen, Paul, it's great to have you in. Paul's from Ballygar Garden Centre. It's not for me to say. Go down and have a chat with Paul and the team. And also, that applies to all of the garden centres out there. They're all great, and we'll be more than happy to help you. Right, we are going to take a break now as we try and set up for some great live music. Stay right where you are. Okay, you're very welcome back to the 9 till noon show. We have live music for you now. Dirt Tax. Jack. Hi, Jack.
Hello. How are you doing?
Where are you, Jack? Jack's behind me. Hi, Jack. Don't creep up on me. I'm very nervous. Hi, Jack. How are you getting on back there? Are you okay?
Yeah, I'm grand.
You're on the drums.
I am.
I get you right in my ear, which is great, isn't it? Give us work it out there. Let you hear, do something. Decent. All right, Jack. Well done. Bobby, where are you?
Yeah, I'm here.
All right, Bobby. I've got you there. Yeah. Don't be ageist. All right, Bobby. Good to have you with us. And also, we've got Sam.
Hello.
Hey, Sam. What's going on?
Nothing much.
Good to have you. Nothing much. And Paul, how are you, Paul?
How are you doing?
Good to have you on as well. How long have you been playing Bobby's Dirt Tax?
About since last Christmas. So how long is that? Like 6 months?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And are you doing your own stuff, doing covers? What's the story?
A bit of both.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And any influences or. I mean, these are all individuals. So
yeah, well, me and Jack love Oasis.
Right, brilliant.
They're big ones.
All the Oasis.
Well, yeah, right, okay. Been, that's the common denominator, and outside of that, you all have your own interests as well, of course. Right, and is there young guys, I suppose, introduced through Oasis, through your parents and stuff, I suppose? You know, that's how we get our influences, is it?
Yeah, basically, yeah.
Yeah, all right, okay. So, you have played 5 gigs so far. You've been up here at Highland Radio, the RCC, the Loft, the Cottage Bar. What's it been like performing live as a group together?
Great. Yeah, great. We love it.
I'd say it's a great buzz.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, because you do all the practice and then you get to see people reacting.
Yeah.
And you are performing at the Donegal Youth Services Our Generation Project, Party in the Park. It'll take place on Friday the 7th of July, which is tomorrow, from 12 noon to 6 p.m. in the Letterkenny Burnham McGlinchey Town Park. Have you been up on a big stage before, or is this your sort of stage debut?
This would be the biggest.
Yeah, all right. So, again, really exciting, and hopefully there's a big crowd.
Yeah.
We'll talk a little bit about what is on offer for people tomorrow. But we're going to hear 2 tracks. What are you going to play for us first? And I just want to tell you to the audience listening and those that are watching, and you can watch the guys, is that we had to play a couple of adverts to get everything set up here. We've set up a whole band in about 3.5 minutes, which I don't think is too bad. So, Bobby, what are you going to play for us first?
Paraphernalia, it's called.
Right, okay.
It's our own song.
Right, so whenever you're ready, then. All right, this is Dirt Tax, their own track, Paraphernalia.
Looking familiar, I think that you're up to see.
Right, okay. Well, that's blown the cobwebs off. Well done.
Right.
Well done, lads. I think your vocals were coming through all right. You said so bloody noisy, yeah. But and I mean that in a good way, but I think they were in the end too. Pumped up my headphones and all was sounding good.
Okay.
Lovely. Brilliant stuff. Well done. That sounds really good. It's a good track.
Yeah.
Who wrote it? Is it collaborative?
Jack wrote the lyrics.
All right, good stuff. Well done, Jack.
Yeah, kind of revolves, yeah.
All right, okay. So how long is your set tomorrow, do you know? Like, how many tracks are you going to get to play tomorrow on...
Well, we've got 20 minutes, is it?
Yeah, 20 minutes.
Brilliant.
All right, okay.
Excellent stuff. So it's going to be a short, sharp shock. All right, listen, as I say, sounds fantastic. So what are you going to do for us next, then?
Rhythm of My Mind, another one of our own.
All right, brilliant stuff. All right, and... can that go down a wee bit, that those two go down just a little bit, just a half a turn?
Me as well?
No, you're grand. You shout louder, son. no, it's just to take the music down a little bit, just so we get your vocals through a little bit clearer. Well, that being said, it sounded good the last time. All right, come here. So tell us what the track is again.
Rhythm of My Mind.
All right, okay. Take it away, guys. Dirt Tax once more time for you.
I wake up in the morning and I'm feeling fine. Getting out of bed, I got rhythm on my mind. I wanna write a song, but I don't know how. Strum my guitar and the drums are going pow, pow, pow. And so make something out of silence. I'm gonna make a song today. So song today, and what do I say? I'm on my way to school on a subway train, thinking of the rhythm as I'm looking at the rain. I'm running from a killer who is on the loose. I'm trying to write, but I've got an excuse. And so make something out of silence. I'm gonna make a song today. So make something out of silence. I'm gonna make a song today. And the guns are going pow, pow, pow. And so make something out of silence. I'm gonna make a song today. So make something out of silence. I'm gonna make a song today. But what do I say? I don't know what to say.
Yeah, well done. Brilliant stuff, lads. That sounds absolutely brilliant. And I just hope it came across on the radio just as good as it sounded in here. Right, so you're playing the Our Generation Project Party tomorrow night in the Letterkenny Burnham McGlinchey Town Park between 12 and 6. Well, we'll not say what time yous are on it. People can get there at 12 and enjoy all of the acts, right? Anything else coming up for the summer? The Lennon Festival's ongoing at the moment.
We played it last night.
Right, how did that go?
Yeah, good, yeah.
Brilliant, great experience. Burton Port Festival, Rathmullen Festival, have they happened yet or are they upcoming gigs?
No, they're coming.
All right, okay.
Burton Port 27th.
If anyone wants to give you a gig opportunity, how do they contact you? Through socials? Instagram, okay.
Dirt Tax.
It's all there. All right, good man, Jack. This is well done to all 4 years. It is four, isn't it? Yeah, well done. That sounded great. Okay, so you can check them out tomorrow, by the way. We're going to bring someone in to talk about it. No, we can't because the drums are blocking the door. Right, okay, I'll tell you all about that a little later on. But we'll take a quick break now, and that will clear the decks for the rest of the show. Well done, Dirt Tax, Jack, Bobby, Sam and Paul. Okay, right, now on to some of your comments coming in, or should we go to our next guest? Actually, we'll go straight to our next guest. Colette O'Donnell is owner of O'Donnell School of Motoring. Hi, Colette.
Hi, Greg. How are you?
It's good to have you on board on the show. And you know what? It's interesting that I'm talking to you because I did see a few comments from people on social media with their own personal experience, and that is an unpleasant experience when out on your L plates trying to learn how to drive or to get that experience, but other drivers not having perhaps the patience that they could have.
Oh my God, you wouldn't believe it. You're actually sitting on learning, you know, or teaching people how to drive. It's absolutely terrible. I come across it every single day.
Any examples? What kind of stuff do you see?
Right, I'll give you one example. I was going around at the lights around by the cinema one day and I had a learner driver on and there was a man behind me in a van and the light was flashing amber and obviously it was taking a little bit of while for the girl to move off and he was blowing the horn behind me and like I have a middle mirror here on my side as well and I could see him and I'm shaking away his hands and the aggression in his face and by the time the girl moved off the light was green. So he followed us, then he was round behind us, then as we were turning up the back road up by the Chinese and we moved into the right lane. He pulled up alongside of me. It was a lovely day. The window was down on my side and he started cursing to me. He says, "You should not be a driving instructor. Do you not know what a flashing amber light is?" I says, "Yes, I do know what a flashing amber light is." I says, "But I'm dealing with a learner driver here." And he was cursing at me and he stuck his two fingers up to me and drove off.
Well, I mean, that's a him problem now because I wouldn't like to be walking around in his head because the car is clearly a vehicle. You know what I mean? It is a car that is there for training people to drive. People know what it's there for. We see them around all of the time. You know, you show grace. I think most people do, don't they, Colette? Or are you seeing it more and more instances of impatience and ignorance?
No, I'm seeing more and more of it, Greg, to be quite honest with you. I've actually seen people behind, like maybe at roundabouts, and I can see them again in my mirror, and they're shaking their hands, shaking their head. They actually, if they're a bit slow moving off, they'll actually go out around you and pull in, and maybe sometimes nearly cause an accident by what they're doing. And I actually had somebody go into the back of me once. They were that close up behind me. They actually hit my car because the person stalled and they actually hit the back of my car then. So it took them longer then to get away. But, the people are getting more impatient. But, like, you know, that's if they're like that on the road, that's actually a reflection on them as well. That's what they're actually like in their daily lives as well. Do you know what I mean? That's their arrogance.
It's just showing a little bit of care for predominantly probably young people, not exclusively, that they're nervous as hell. They're trying to get on the road. Who's to say they're not trying to do it so they can get a job or they're waiting on the test for a job? You know, like we've all been there at some point or other. What is wrong with people that they can't breathe? Count to five, or if it takes 10, count to 10. And the thing is it doesn't interfere in their day at all. That person who was trying to get your learner to move on amber, how long is it? Eight seconds does it take to go from amber to
flash,
green?
Flash and amber.
You know, like it's seconds. It's not a minute.
Yeah. But how would they like if someone was treating their son or daughter or a member of their
people
family?
People don't think like that anymore, it seems, Colette. People just don't think like that anymore.
No. They don't think like that. Like, you know, it's just pure arrogance. Like, and the sign, as you say, is on top of the car. They know it's a learner's car. They know that they're learning to drive. Like, they're intimidating. And then the person gets more nervous. And then, you know, they're right up behind them. They're driving right up close by and they're not giving them the space. And the person's getting more nervous. Then if they stall the car and then they're blowing the horn, then they're more nervous. Then they're going to start, you know, doing things then that they wouldn't normally do if people was. But there is, now don't get me wrong, there is genuinely nice people out there that will be courteous to the learner drivers and will let them go and have the patience with them.
But like, Colette, you know, can I say, see that person that was screaming blue murder at you, right?
Yeah.
You can be sure that that person, when they get to a roundabout, they'll go into whichever lane gets them away quickly. They'll not bother with the indicators because they don't care who's in front of them or behind them. They'll cross lanes. They'll skip lights. Yep. They're the ones that you meet that have skipped the lights at the road work and you're sort of nose to nose halfway through. You know what I mean? Yep. And they're the fully qualified driver. Do you know? You can just imagine how that person might drive. He's flashing his lights behind you if you're going 50 kilometres per hour on the four lanes. You know he's bashing the lights and bibbing the horn like.
Yeah, there's another case where there's one resident where we do the turnabout, and we actually we're out on the test routes, and he'll come up and he'll actually drive up on the pavement. He'll come round, he'll blow the horn, he'll drive up on the pavement to get around the learner driver, even when they're out in the driving test as well. He'll do this, and he'll pure intimidate them. He'll drive right up to your door of your car, then he'll reverse back, and then he'll go up and around the pavement then, because he feels that we shouldn't be on the road up around where we're doing
In fairness, Colette, I have heard people with some frustration of learner drivers doing those kind of manoeuvres at peak times, and I'm not in any way just saying that behaviour is justified, but is there an issue there that maybe, you know, when people are learning that they could to keep out of, but then again, how are you going to learn if you're not doing it when it's the busiest?
Yeah, but we have as much right to be on the road as anybody else. We're paying our tax and insurance. Like, you know, there's nothing, like, you know, like, why, like, you know, there's peak times. Like, you know, if you go home at a peak time, you're going to be stuck in traffic. Like, you know, I mean, like, you know, we're only there for not even a minute doing a turnabout, like, you know what I mean? So we're not holding traffic up that much. And, like, you know, so, like, if there's delays in town and traffic, like, you're going to be sitting in traffic, like, and there's nothing you can do about it, like, you know what I mean? So, like, people have to learn to drive, people have to learn to practice and test routes. So, like, you know, I think we've very much right to be on the road to do our job as well as anybody else. Like, we're teaching people a skill, we're teaching people safety on the road. So I think, like, you know, at the end of the day, we're doing a good job, and I think, you know, we're making safer drivers on the road, and people need to appreciate that, and just a bit of common sense, a bit of respect for the learner drivers, and that's all we're looking for when we're out there, like, at the end of the day, Greg. Like,
it's,
you
the
know,
aggression
compassion.
To, you see, it's the aggression. I mean, like, you know, I can understand that people can get a little bit frustrated, and if you verbalise it internally, right, or squeeze the steering wheel a little bit tighter, okay, that's going to happen because people are busy. But it's this aggression towards not only you, but also a young person who could be up to hide up with nerves, it depends. It's the aggression, it's the confrontation, it's the gesturing, it's the swearing. There's no need or justification for that in any situation. I'm no angel. I think people know that. Like, I'm a normal person, and bib the horn or effing blind very, very rarely. I'm not saying I've never done it right, but certainly not to a learner driver. But my point is that it's creeping in more and more when we're not respecting or caring about each other as much as we used to for some reason.
Yeah, but you've got to realise as well, like, you know, even if it's not even to learn a drive, even if somebody is maybe a bit slow on the road, like, you know, you don't know what that person has gone through in their personal life that day, or maybe, you know, they maybe got bad news, maybe they, you know, and people's blowing the horn, being aggressive to them as well.
It could, like, be the nurse, like, that you end up under their care of in the hospital, you know, who's to say?
Yeah, exactly. Like, you know, and, like, you know, a bit of, like, you know, they don't know what they've gone through that day. So, like, a bit of compassion, like, and then they're adding extra stress onto their lives. Like, you know, people need to sit back, take a look at what they're doing to other people, and show a bit of respect for other people. Like, you know, at the end of the day, like, you know, like, people need to just show a bit of respect for other people and a bit of compassion for other people. That's all we're looking for in this life. Like, you know, I think at the end of the day, that's what we're just looking for here. And maybe by highlighting it on your show today, by highlighting it in the paper today, maybe all of this, maybe people will take a step, maybe people will take a step back and look at it, like, you know, hopefully this will. And thank you, I really appreciate you for highlighting it on the show today, and like, you know, hopefully people will take note of it.
Before I let you go, Colette, how's the frustration levels amongst your students with the delay in actually sitting their test? You know, I mean, obviously you have to wait 6 months before you can apply, you know, after you pass your test, your theory, for an example, and you have to do your 12 mandatories. But then when you get to apply and you go on the estimator and it's 3, 4, 5, 6 months before you're even invited to apply, we need to get that time frame down, don't we?
Yeah, definitely. We definitely do. And they are recruiting new testers, so hopefully it will bring it down. But that is quite frustrating for people who need it for work, who need it for, like, maybe people, you know, emigrating as well. And then if they go then and they fail the test, and then, like, you know, they're back on the same waiting list again. Like, you know, they need to do something to sort of, they definitely do need to do something to bring the waiting times down. And it is frustrating for young people. Like, it's frustrating. Like, so they do need, but they are recruiting new testers, so hopefully they will bring it down. And at the end of the day, people just want to get their license and get on the road. And especially with us living in such a rural place, there's not much transport here. So we do need the car. We do need to get on the road as soon as possible after we pass our test, after we pass our theory and get our lessons behind us. We do need to get on the road as soon as possible.
All right, Clett, lovely chatting to you. Clett O'Donnell, owner of O'Donnell School of Motoring, simply asking a little bit of understanding, courtesy and basic manners. Internalise your frustrations if you have them, but why scar another person's day when you've forgotten about it 10 minutes later and they could be bothered by it for the next day? All right then, thanks Colette.
Thank you, Greg. Lovely chatting to you. Thank you.
Bye bye. Bye bye. Take care of yourself. Thank you very much indeed for that. A caller says, we're all disgusted with the mismanagement of public money in RTE, but delve into the same mismanagement of public money that our public sector. That's where you'll get your eyes open. Well, it is public sector as well. Hi, Greg. Wonder about these people on the radio. Remember the election voting machine scandal? But the taxpayer public money still paying rent for these machines and the claim of expenses and not in the doll and all. I could go on and on and on. How many of these? I don't know. I think that was resolved. But I do know it's going to cost $8,000 a year to store the set for the Late Late Show musical, which is not insignificant. All right, we'll be back with you tomorrow morning at 9.